Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 94, and you have not experienced Shakespeare until you have read him in the original Thal. I'm Keith.
I like.
Thank you. Very
cool. I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
That was all I could think of at the beginning of that story.
But you mutated that, right? Was that from the...
No.
That's so then they ripped from that from Star Trek.
That wasn't in it at all.
So you mutated that.
That was all me.
You melded it between Star Trek and the Daleks. Okay.
Good word use.
I was going to say, I don't remember that. Because there was one other thing that I felt like it was a ripoff. I mean, other than they reused the line, Cry Havoc and Let Slip the Dogs of War. But, I mean, that's a famous Shakespeare line. So.
I love a lot of Shakespeare in this one.
Yeah. Well, sure they do, but...
Oh, it's because Shakespeare was in it.
But as a boy, and apparently he doesn't remember anything when the 10th Doctor comes back. So.
Well, you know, he didn't look the same.
Well, he's quite older now. All right. What are we doing first?
How was your guys' weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Of course Shakespeare's older.
Well, that's why he doesn't look the same.
Given.
That's why he doesn't look the same.
He's 8 years old.
You said eternally. He doesn't look the same.
No, the Doctor doesn't look the same to Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah, but Shakespeare seems pretty, like, weirded out by 10 and everything that's going on, whereas if he'd have been plucked out of his time and sent to the future, maybe when you're, like, years later, you think that was a dream. Maybe there was something out of...
Well, or maybe, spoilers... From events later, that never actually happened to Shakespeare.
Okay.
Because of the paradox?
Yeah.
Mm, could be.
Of course, the wibbly wobbly timey
wimey. The fourth Doctor made reference to meeting Shakespeare. But.
Well, that's true.
Tenth
yeah.
claims that this is the first time. So either the fourth Doctor is referencing the tenth Doctor's time stream somehow, or.
Well, that can't happen.
He met him and
the
then
Doctor's
he got
time stream is linear, so.
Well, could happen.
Unless...
You bump into a future generation of yourself and not know it.
Or, in the 50th, Tom Baker and Peter and David Tennant come back, they talk about meeting Shakespeare, and that's how Tom Baker remembers it.
Ooh, that could happen.
4-10 back.
But it would have to be a 4 before he makes the statement, so... Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you know, the elasticity isn't the same when you get pulled.
No. I'm not. No, the aging thing. The aging thing works. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that because they fix that with that one word. But the
you never know where they're.
No, but I mean, they have to actually say in that to justify it. So to make that plausible,
I don't think they're going to go that far.
I don't think they will either. That's
where
what I'm
are
saying.
You now? It doesn't Nisa work. And Tegan.
Yeah, I mean, that was the perfect, hey, this kind of place is where he was pulled
But it
from,
didn't, because so. He never answered it.
Well, he didn't, but...
But isn't that most of his run, too? Isn't there, like, only, like, one or two seasons compared to the amount of time he spent with Nyssa and Tegan? Isn't that the big bulk of his run?
Of who?
5.
No, it's been half.
Mm-hmm.
He was with Tegan.
Oh, so he had a 50-50 shot.
He was with
shot.
Tegan most of that time, yes, but... Nyssa and Tegan would have been... Or he was with... No, I'm sorry. Well, does he say Nyssa and Tegan? He does.
Where are you? Nyssa and Tegan?
He doesn't say Tegan.
Oh, he just showed up again.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, I know. So, could be.
All they'd have to say is name drop the companion that time is set.
I can't believe we spent this much talking about this. What'd you guys do this weekend?
Nice open, Keith.
Thanks.
I liked
it. It was good. What'd you guys do this weekend?
Not a whole lot. Went and sold off some duplicate movies after our move-in and picked up the third series of Doctor Who.
Yay.
So now I'm only 2 series away from completing the collection.
Ooh,
which
2?
1 and 4.
1 and 4.
Christmas.
And if you'd like to support Keith and his efforts to get the entire collection, visit our Amazon store.
But I believe we talked when I picked up season 2 used that... Some of the titles on the discs weren't quite right. And my trend continues. And it's, oddly enough, it's the same location. Maybe not oddly enough. But on disc 5 of my set, it says the cast of the Time Lords. Instead of the last. Cast with a K.
Cast with a K.
Yes.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it's cast with a K.
It's the cast.
The cast of the Time Lords. I'm going to have to go home and check mine.
Well, that's because the L and the K are very close on the keyboard.
Right next to each other, yeah. So I have a super rare edition.
No, you have a bootleg.
Hey, I do not know of, I do not know of this. The barcode on its right.
You have a bootleg.
It's more than I can say for the barcode for season 2.
Which is not right.
Which is for season 3.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow, you got hosed all the way around on that one.
The discs still play fine and normal. And
the perils of buying used material.
I bought it legally. I don't know anything otherwise.
You can buy bootlegs all you want. It's only illegal to sell bootlegs. You can buy.
You mean I don't have to keep that copy of the Star Wars Christmas special hidden under my bed anymore?
No, it is illegal to manufacture. It is illegal to sell. It is not illegal to own and possess or buy.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So we also made a trip up to Kansas City.
Your Empire Strikes Back that I think I ended up with that you got from Japan was...
Oh, yeah, it's a special edition DVD.
And you sold that to me. Sean!
You
gave it to me.
Go ahead, come back at me with that one. He paid money for it.
Again, no, it is not illegal to buy, possess, or own bootleg material. It's only illegal to produce and to sell.
Oh, I've read that backwards.
Okay. Yes, it's only illegal to produce and sell. You can purchase and own, but you cannot produce and sell.
Gotcha.
Produce and or sell.
I think I gave it to you anyway.
You did.
still have that?
Uh-huh.
The Japanese?
I do. It's got the subtitles on it. Yeah.
Wow.
Won't be worth a bit, but it's really cool just to have a bootleg copy of Empire Strikes Back.
I used to have a bootleg copy of...
I think it's
Matrix Revolutions.
I think it is.
Laserdisc.
No, Laserdisc, yeah.
So I already have two. Now I have two versions of DVD Laserdisc on DVD. One just happens to have subtitles on it. Japanese subtitles.
So they're useless subtitles.
Yep, pretty much. But the audio is in English, though.
So. But are they covering up the alien subtitles?
I don't remember.
I don't think so, because I think the Star Wars subtitles, because they were smart.
There
and they put
are
them below
no
in the
alien anymore. Subtitles in Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, I couldn't remember.
Oh, you're right. There aren't any.
Nope.
God, we're geeks. Who else knows that? I mean, really. You know the best film with Japanese subtitles? I don't know if it's on the DVD or not. Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The Criterion Laserdisc release. They had translated the movie into Japanese and then retranslated it back in English, so it was in Japanese with English subtitles. And there was no reason for this other than they thought it was funny because the weird stuff that happens when you translate.
Yeah.
Wow, does it change a lot of stuff? I watched it. I sat down and watched the entire movie with the Japanese subtitles on and the Japanese audio track and English subtitles and laughed myself silly because none of this matches up. But
Sean, what'd you do this weekend?
I did a lot of homework. I'm finally caught up, mostly, from Tennessee. And then,
unfortunately, you couldn't catch up with homework for the show.
Well, yeah, I have priorities. I skipped shows tonight. They asked me if I was coming over to the group thing, and I was like, no.
I'm glad you did.
I've got Vortex homework for you. as keeper of the schedule, I should probably be a little more prepared for, for these eventualities. After warning you guys, you've got 3 weeks to get through these audio adventures. And then I'm listening to him on Sunday. But and then we wound up going to Renfest today.
Yes. And Sarah and I went with you, but only stayed for about an hour because Sarah wasn't feeling very good. So we came
home. You guys have been there this year already.
Yeah, but we didn't get to shop or anything when we went last time because we were with the nephew. So we still didn't buy anything. I don't know how we managed to go to Renfest twice in a year and not buy anything.
So on 11th Doctor.
Really?
Apparently the same 11th Doctor.
People are cosplaying as the Doctor.
Oh, yeah.
At Renfest.
I saw a couple of Jedis, too. I'm not sure how that... The Doctor I can rationalize. Yeah, the Jedi is a little harder to squeeze in.
Last weekend, I think some of the ladies from the Kansas City Time Lord Society went and cosplayed as their Femme Doctors.
Okay.
they are... I'm actually very excited about this. I don't know if you...
Yay for spreading your Doctor Who fandom.
Glenn apparently does not that's just follow the Facebook group for Kansas City Time Lord Society, because there's all kinds of interesting tidbits that he just seems to miss out on.
But I do follow them.
They apparently... Are you ready for this?
They must not pop up in my news feed at the right time or something.
They have...
See, none of them, unless you're friends with the person, I don't think pops up in your news feed. You have to go to the group.
The group pops up in my news feed. Well, the group doesn't pop up in mine.
I get notifications when somebody commented.
That's all I get. I get notifications of it. But they apparently have confirmed 10 of the 11 Femme Doctors for Planet Comic-Con next year. So they're working on somebody. They need somebody to be a seventh.
You should get Mel to do it.
I should get Mel to do it. But they're going to have all 11 doctors present for the TARDIS console.
Oh, that's cool. So that's fun.
I thought that was kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
So and they're looking for some men to male cosplay the companions.
Which I thought was a genius idea.
That is genius.
But a woman still needs to cosplay as Rory and Mickey. And Jack.
And Ian.
Well, yeah, that would
only well,
make sense. And Harry.
Yeah.
And we're going to go through them all.
Turlo.
Steven.
If anybody's interested, I should probably lay claim to this myself, but if anybody's interested, I'm telling you right now, cosplay as Sarah Jane from Genesis of the Daleks, because you get to wear fatigues, combat boots, and a sweater. You're pretty much set.
We didn't do anything this weekend. We were kind of lazy. We decorated for Halloween, and we went and saw Brave in the theater. So.
Was that your first time seeing it?
That was my first time seeing it.
How was it?
It was good. It was very enjoyable. It ranks up there high in my Pixar favorites.
Oh.
Yeah. It doesn't unseat Toy Story or Nemo.
Those are the top two?
Yeah. Toy Story and Nemo are probably my top two. Monsters, Inc.'s up there. I'd put it probably fourth or fifth, though. It'd be in my top five.
Did you guys happen to see?
Yes, I did.
Point out the,
yes, I did.
I love
very, very cool.
The brave chick at six.
Yeah.
What this picture is? We'll put it on the show notes. Is Disney princesses dressed up as the Doctor
and Tangled as
yeah
with the scarf and the hair?
Which this woman does some really cute art with the Disney princesses of and like them living in a house.
Ariel as David Tennant is just. Spot.
Oh
on.
Yeah.
Well,
now Snow White should have been Hartnell.
I have an issue with this though.
Who should have
He's finally
Hartnell?
A ginger.
Snow White.
Oh.
Why is that spot on? He's finally a ginger
because of the bouncy.
Okay. Character.
Just
okay.
That's the same personality.
Belle as 11. I think is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. It's very cool.
Wish you folks at home could see this.
Well, go to the website. Sean will post the picture. In fact, he's doing that now as we speak.
Okay, I'll do that right now.
So, all right, well, shall we move on to feedback?
No, let's go with news.
Yeah, we do that first, usually, don't we?
What's in the news?
Where am I
today?
I need another cookie.
We have a decent amount of news this week.
News.
Tell your wife she's going to make us fat. If Glenn's going to have another cookie, I need another cookie.
They ate the whole plate last week.
She's okay with this.
Yeah, well, they were oatmeal raisin cookies last week, so you go ahead.
They were?
Yeah. For the record, this week they're peanut butter chocolate chip.
Sarah,
I told you it tastes like there was peanut butter in there.
Sarah,
which is why I'm not
this,
partaking in them as much. I'm not a big peanut butter fan.
I'm
in my
not
cookie.
A big peanut butter fan. Either.
How can you not be a peanut butter fan?
I like peanut butter. I don't like peanut butter cookies.
You know what I like?
These are okay because they have
chocolate chip.
Those are good.
Well, they were oatmeal raisin last week. I do remember that.
And they were delicious.
Oatmeal raisin.
Best cookie ever.
No.
What you're saying is I ate the whole plate.
You ate the whole plate last week.
I ate quite a bit of them, too.
Between the two, I had like two.
Yeah.
And every time I went back, it was like...
Oatmeal butterscotch is pretty good, too.
Oh. I'm not a fan of butterscotch.
Oh, I love butterscotch.
Oatmeal butterscotch are awesome, except for one thing. Oatmeal.
There's nothing wrong with oatmeal and a cookie.
And that's the news. This week. No, really. We have a little bit of news.
We have some news. Matt Smith and Stephen Moffat got their hands put in Simmons for the Doctor Who Experience. So that, and these are the first two doctors, the first doctor and the first showrunner to do this. I'm assuming they're eventually going to go back and try to get as many as possible.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
I heard they're digging up J&T and they're going to cut his hands off and do it.
as many living...
Wait, too soon?
Sorry. They also unveiled...
Oh, as many living. As many as, living. I got you. Yes. All right.
They also
unveiled...
I was
looking forward to seeing Verity's arms. Sorry.
Some new displays, exhibits. Osmond's dress and boots. Solomon and Nefertiti's costumes. And the robots from that story. And the chained weeping angel and cherub angels from Angels Take Manhattan are now on display at the Doctor Who Experience.
That's very cool.
Yes. And next we have sad news.
We do?
They were... It's exciting, but it's sad because...
What's the sad news?
I don't remember covering sad news in the show notes.
I don't remember.
It's exciting
either.
Because it's new Who to us. But it's
sad. Oh, you're talking about PS? But it's sad in a different way.
It's sad, but we get
I know you're throwing that in with the news.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's they released, if you haven't seen it, PS is an unshot scene voiced over by Arthur Darvill.
Part of it is.
Yeah, part
of it. The
part of the scene that would have had dialogue.
Yeah.
Of Amy and Rory's... Spoilers. Amy and Rory's son delivering a note, a letter to Brian, explaining to him what happened. And it was really well done.
Even though it was
all storyboarded, I wish they would have shot it.
Yeah. I'm of both minds of that, because I would have loved to have seen that.
I wouldn't have wanted it on the episode.
On the flip side,
as an extra,
yeah, it
shot,
needed to
yes.
be like a. It needed to be like a
Night and the Doctor.
Well, yeah, or a epilogue is what they should have called it.
Instead of a prequel, we have an epilogue this week. That I think,
because it would have taken away from Amy's heartfelt ending.
Yeah.
Of the episode, I think if they.
Yeah, I didn't want it in the episode, but I still wish they would have shot.
But yeah, it was fantastic. And I teared up again when I watched it, because it was so sad. Because
I teared up more at this than I did at the actual episode.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I watched it a second time.
You're heartless.
No, like I said, I think it was because I had just gotten back.
You know what that says? He doesn't like Amy. That's what it says.
I've been on record.
Your first companion.
He went out and teared up on Amy. He didn't tear up on
her. No, we watched it a second time. I told you, I think it was because I was emotionally robbed of my response to it after the
But you said you watched it a second time.
But I watched it a second time.
And you cried.
I teared up at the Butch Cassidy ending when they went to Young Amelia and everything.
Oh,
went to the black and white.
That's where you should.
That's where I teared up.
Oh, but then the tears started way before that.
Me too. But I mean, if that last scene
didn't get you,
little Amelia didn't get you.
Well, like I said, I still felt robbed because I got to that moment and I started to tear up, and then it was over and the credits rolled, and I was like, okay, I'm done. And I just like, damn it, I really wanted to. This sounds weird. I wanted to be more.
Maybe you were expecting to be more emotionally impacted.
For the record, I'm just going to interject here. Keith and Sean do not live in a bad area of town. But it seems like every fourth episode we record, there are emergency sirens going on in the background.
This is what happens when you have the windows open.
Yeah, well, but
then
the
AC's too loud.
But what I'm saying is, they don't live in a bad part. Does anybody hear? Gunfire following that tonight.
If you heard emergency
like
sirens
the Bronx
in the first
New York
half
or well,
of
Bronx
traveling the vortex. I did live in a bad part of town.
Well, you lived on a seedier part of town.
Our friend Blake,
south of there
is moving across the alley from where I used to
live. Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Do you remember the big staircase?
Yeah.
First floor of that house.
There you go. All right. Anyway, but so I didn't mean to interject,
no,
but
that's
I just
fine.
That's like literally every third or fourth episode there are sirens in the background.
We should just
of
tell
our podcast.
We're coming to you from East St. Louis.
Yeah. Right off of King's Highway.
This week we're in Detroit. We're thinking about going to the lower side of Chicago next week.
We're recording this under the table in the living room.
Our Halloween special will be brought to you from Tijuana.
All right, sorry.
No, I think part of it, and this is something that I kind of had to tell Keith and Sarah that we kind of explored this a little bit this week, is that back in the day, when you and I watched the show, there was not a big media blitz. This was not Well, nothing was blitzed the way it is now.
No, well, not here. Maybe in the UK.
And we
here.
Were not part of it. I mean, we run a podcast. We're geeks. We're fans now, whereas maybe we weren't originally. We were kind of fresh into it.
You don't think it'd still be plugged in for new series? Any news and stuff?
No.
You don't think so?
Clueless. Dude, the most excited I got about new television shows was trying to find out who shot JR. I mean, that was, you know, that was a big deal.
And you
deal.
Had to wait 3 months for
and
that.
And you did. They didn't.
But you were a fan of New Who before.
Right.
You were excited about it.
But what I'm saying is, back in the day, when a companion left, we didn't know it was coming.
Classic Who.
No, that's what I'm saying. You don't think you'd be this plugged in during New Who?
I wasn't.
Not as much now.
I understand
the whole first
more
season of
in.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it was on when Eccleston came back.
Well,
but
yeah.
By this point in the run of new season.
By this point in the run of new season,
you're saying
since 2005, it's now 2012.
We're immensely plugged in now, but the mainstream's plugged in now.
Yeah,
but.
Okay, I guess they...
Until about 3 years ago, the mainstream... Well, not even three. Yeah, 3 years ago, the mainstream wasn't even plugged in.
Yeah,
okay. It was still us geeks that were getting our information online or from podcasts, which is where I was getting all my information.
So you don't think you would have been getting your information like you was?
I've been getting my information from Glenn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I used to call him up and say, hey, have you watched this episode? Did you know that the Children in Need special, guess who comes back?
Yeah,
I mean, that
would have been it.
Quit waiting on Madeline, go watch it.
So, but you know, it was just always a surprise. You'd get to the end of a run and somebody would leave and it would be like, oh, I didn't know about that. And it was always an emotional trauma when a companion left. It was always a big deal. And then when a doctor regenerated, that was huge.
I didn't cry.
So,
I was upset. This
we knew. I mean, we've known forever. That the pawns are going to be leaving. So I think that took part of it away from me right there.
Yeah.
Doing the podcast, doing this, and being as plugged in as we are, I think kind of robbed me of it. And then obviously the emotional exhaustion of that week was a lot of it too. But I, watching it the second time, I teared up, and then the credits rolled, and it's like, man, I'm done. I just can't get to that level. And then you guys said, PS is out. You got to watch this. I was like, okay.
I didn't know about it until you guys told me about it Friday.
Well, he told me about it. I hadn't watched it yet.
Oh, okay.
You'd seen it before he did on... Yeah. Because I didn't tell him about
you
it.
You asked me on Friday if I'd seen it
yet. I asked you if you'd watched it yet.
Oh, but you hadn't.
But I hadn't.
But he hadn't. He hadn't watched it by Friday night. Who?
He asked me if I was finished with the finished stuff. And he hadn't even started, and I was launching into that.
Yeah, see? It's all a trap, Glenn.
It is a trap.
It's a trap. We watched it late Friday night after Friday Night Who.
That's good.
Thank you.
And
that's what that eyeball was.
Ethel Abbott by
all the poor Mon Calamari.
I cried. I flat out cried watching these little drawing stick figures of Brian.
Maybe because I was at work, I didn't let myself cry.
Oh,
so I watched it at work, and I was like, I'm not going to let myself. I got teary.
I'm not going to cry.
And I didn't have headphones on. I wasn't immersed in it when I watched
people,
it. You know how it is.
People are here. They're going to see me. I'm not going to cry.
It wasn't like Braveheart. I wept at the end, but
you cried at the end of Braveheart?
Oh, I wept like a baby at the end of Braveheart.
Braveheart was a mediocre movie.
Because you think Mel Gibson's
a mediocre actor.
I'm not getting into that with you this week. He may be crazy now, but at the time Braveheart came out...
He was still mediocre.
Anyway, so this kind of was my emotional outlet. It finally reached its zenith at that point. I cried all through PS. And I'd like to point out, I called it, because last week or 2 weeks ago on the podcast, I said, you know what I'd really like? I'd really like them to do a Back to the Future 2, where they Western Union Brian a telegram and let him know what's going on. They need to write him a letter.
I thought of that when you said that. And I was like, aw, yeah, that's it.
Further proof that Stephen Moffat listens to our show.
Yeah, but Chris Chimble wrote that.
Yeah, but Moffat's the Supreme Court. Yeah, he said, hey, Chris, I'm busy.
I'll give you that.
I think it's great that this is the third instance of writing in the past involving angels.
Yeah, because that's that
becoming an
ML.
Blink,
yeah,
and then twice in, or once in Time of Angels in Manhattan, and then now this. The PS.
Oh, yeah, gotcha. All right, moving on to our next bit of news. Well, this is not exactly news, but it's in a news article.
It's
still some high speculation. It's from Female First, the celebrity gossip and lifestyle magazine. The headline is Billy Piper to make a Doctor Who return? Question mark. They had talked to Billy, who wants to be in the 50th anniversary next year in some way or form. They've also confirmed that Karen has said that she wants to be. Karen Gillan, who obviously just left the show this year, wants to be in it again. But another thing that I found very interesting, and credit where credit's due, we actually got this tipped off to us from... I lost him. New listener. I'll go back there. Anyway, Carol Ann Ford, who portrayed the Time Lord's first ever TV companion, Susan Foreman, in 1963, alongside the late William Hartnell, who starred as the Doctor, is also among those expected to make a cameo next year.
Jason so, I sent that to
yes.
us.
And so thank you, Jason, for tipping us off on that.
Thank you, Jason.
Again,
welcome
it's
to the
just
show.
It's just speculation.
I read this differently. I read this as...
Well, you read things differently than the average person, so... Go ahead.
But what the text says is Billy Piper is wanted to return. And then later it says a source told Daily Express newspaper. So that tells me that Billy hasn't said anything yet. And that these are... this is the list of...
Sure.
This,
no,
this is the list of people they want to come back.
Oh, you say wanted to come back. I mean, oh, I thought it was a mistype.
She is wanted to come back. I don't think anybody actually talked to Billy.
Who talks like that? It must be British.
I think this is a source inside the BBC who says, this is our list of people we want to return for the 50th.
I see.
Which it's great and awesome that they're going to work
on
Carol Ann.
David, they do quote saying, but he has said in the past that
he
would come
he
back.
Yes, he has. So... But it would still be awesome to see Carol Ann Ford come back.
Oh, it does say, and it's hoped that they would be involved. So, yeah. So, anyway, they're on a list, anyway, of possibilities.
At least Susan's on a list.
Yeah.
So I mean, we kind of expect any new series to try to reach out to any new series companion.
Well, those would be certainly easier to get back.
Well, yes, what you're saying absolutely. Is that at this moment, our 100% confirmed... speculative list of people includes Tom Baker, who said he'd come back if they asked, David Tennant,
yes,
Susan, or Carol Ann Ford,
Billy Piper. I'm sure Freema would. She hasn't said anything about her.
Who's the... McGann. Paul McGann has publicly said he would come back if asked.
And now, according to this, Karen Gillan.
And Karen Gillan. So,
and you know who we know is going
to
be in the 50s?
She's wanted to come back.
Yeah. Well, that's what he's saying, the speculative list.
The 100%
And the one person
list.
We know for sure that will be there is the 11th Doctor, Matt Smith.
Matt Smith has said he will be there.
Unless he retires.
No, he has said
no,
he
he
will
said
be there.
He's going to
yeah,
be
he
there.
He also said he wasn't going to be there, and then he said he was going to be there, and then he said he wasn't. Then he said he's going for one more year after
he
that.
He never said he wasn't.
I don't
want
any stuff.
He never said he wasn't
going to
be there.
He lies almost as much as Moffat.
He said he is weighing his options. Many times. He's a doctor.
He's
he
saying if,
lie.
If
I'm
if I don't
convinced
get...
he'll be there.
Yeah. Now, his last thing was that he's on board for the 50th. So,
and it's all guns blazing, apparently.
What's next, Keith?
Up next, there's a contest on Facebook via TV Guide to get the Doctor to get Doctor Who on the cover.
If you're listening to this, stop your podcast, stop your iPod, stop your MP3 player right now, your computer, whatever you're listening to us on, go vote and then come back because we're going to make this happen.
Vote early, vote often.
Yes.
You can vote more than once in this particular contest.
And do it. Do it.
Doctor
do it, do
Who
it.
In its entire 49 and a half year run has never graced the cover of TV Guide. This is a grievous error that needs to be addressed.
Was this year the first time it ever graced the cover of Entertainment Weekly?
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
This was the first time it had graced a magazine cover in the United States that didn't have Doctor Who in the title of it.
Any entertainment magazine whatsoever.
I'm pretty sure that there's
it was the movie was on the cover of Skylog. I have that one. It's a little tiny picture, but
it's been on other.
Oh, okay.
It's been on like
But major entertainment sci-fi magazine major, is what, major, they're, what yeah. they're saying, yeah.
Not something you can pick up at a grocery store. Right, this you exactly. can.
Right, absolutely. So go vote. That's all we're going to say about that.
And we will post that's the link to say about that. The contest on our show notes.
Yes, we will. It's already there. All right. And Sean has one more piece of news for us before we move on to feedback, to our huge list of feedback.
Gallifrey One has updated their guest list with some surprise new additions, according to their website. They've got a bunch of people that are behind the scenes.
Honestly, some of them aren't a surprise.
Well, you never know. A bunch of them are some behind-the-scenes folk. We've got costume designer June Hudson. We've got director Douglas McKinnon. We've got...
I come with the listener, you start with the lower tier and go to the higher tier. I mean, you start right out with the tall tier, well, the high tier.
That's, I'm building the suspense.
Why don't you build the suspense with me?
Because you could have seen the list.
I don't like you.
He's right.
Don't. Keep going.
Writer Andrew Smith, who introduced the world to Adric.
Woo!
There's an autograph opportunity for you folks. I'll be in that line. Jane Eppinson, who, of course, was on Torchwood Miracle Day and a slew of other shows. A couple of stars from Babylon 5, Julie Caitlin Brown and Andrea Thompson. And now the biggies, or biggers. Nina Tressant-White, who played Melz in Let's Kill Hitler. Actor Mark Shepard is returning.
Who was sorry.
Canton Everett Delaware III.
He's an ass. I don't like him. No, he really is.
Have you met the man?
No, but listen to Stephen... I won't be able to say his last name again. I can say it every once in a while. Stephen over at Radio Free Scarro. Listen to his interview with him. The guy's a total jerk.
I don't think I ever heard that interview.
Total jerk. Sorry.
Well, he's not
Mark, I hope you're listening to this show list. Because you're... No, he's not Eric
he's not an Eric
Although there's a chance that Mark Shepard could be listening to this show. There's no chance that Eric Roberts was listening to this show.
Mark Shepard is... I don't think...
When dealing with celebrities, there's...
I'd like him to redeem himself and prove to me that he's not
too,
a jerk.
Quite honestly. I think Mark Shepard is one of the guys that he knows what side of the bread his butter's on.
He's a lot...
That's the
he's
thing.
He's a lot full of himself is what he is.
Sean Dingwell, who played Pete Tyler in the new series, very is cool. going to be there.
Getting better.
Ben Browder, star of Farscape, Stargate SG-1, and Isaac, everybody's favorite.
For 20 minutes.
Marshall, or what was he, a Marshall?
Sure. Right this time, Chrissy. I got to write this time.
In a town called Mercy.
Longer than that still.
21 or something like that.
And the big one, just announced as a 100% probable maybe, for the 50th anniversary, Carol Ann Ford
speaking
is going
of,
to be at Galley this year. Of. Or next year.
We'll ask her if she'll be in the 50th.
2013.
We
we will.
There you go.
We'll have all kinds of scoops from you. Two-thirds of our podcast are confirmed to be at Galley.
We already know he's not. I mean, he already said he can't afford it.
Well, it's not so much can't afford. It's the fact that Sarah can't get vacation.
And, for a day? I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm taking a Friday
She doesn't
off.
Have vacation yet.
She has to be without a year. Pay?
Well, maybe.
I mean, you know, I know you said you guys did that for the trip or something, but
yeah, and
it was really rough. But
yeah.
One day, come on.
Yeah,
Leave on Friday morning
and I'd
like
still
I
have
am,
to get
or
a
Thursday
new job.
Night late if you can.
And I'll still have to get a new job.
And then come back on Sunday. No, we'll both call him sick. Oh, yeah. Really see him squirm.
I like it.
All right, cool.
I will never coerce news. Somebody to do something they shouldn't do. But I will say this.
He turned his head, too, when he did that. All right, next
you should call in sick.
Feedback.
We've got some feedback, but not much today, because people apparently thought I was complaining when I did the song last week. And don't write in.
People could... Oh. You think that's why they didn't write in this week?
Just for the record, folks, we love your feedback. Please keep it coming. Don't ever feel like we don't want to read it. I think we'll be the first person to admit that we may have had a bit much when...
Oh, there was a lot last week.
The Pons left. And I mean, with justified reason. There was a lot of news
and
a lot of stuff going on. But we're always happy to get feedback from you, and we're always happy to read it out. So,
Chrissy, who got hers in at very, very last minute. Sent some, so...
She's our only feedbacker this week. She says...
Is that what that is?
That's what this is. I know we're out of order, but...
I thought he was lecturing because of something that's coming up in her feedback.
I'm going to have Sean read it.
Okay. Oh, I know why. Yeah, you're right. The hell, Google? Are you guys getting a weird, like, little Nemo thing on the Google? Where's my mail?
What?
That's the main page, yes.
It's a little Nemo.
If you go to the main page of Google, it's little Nemo.
It's throwing me off because it's Nemo. Not where it should be. Okay, there we go.
What the heck is Little Nemo?
You know, that animated show comic. From back in the 80s. That's a movie. It's got Rene Auberjonois. And...
What?
The comic.
It's an animated movie.
It's a French comic.
It's a French animated... Well, so it started as a French comic. And then they turned it into
which is what this is referencing.
You don't remember Little Nemo?
No.
Little Nemo Adventures in Slumberland, I think is the name of the film.
I wasn't even a kid when that came. I was in college or something.
What was it, 80s?
That's not what...
No. I have a different one.
That is not
that's
Little
different.
Nemo.
That is completely different.
Huh.
That's Winsor McCay. Oh, it's his birthday.
Oh,
he's a cartoonist.
He probably so did.
Must depend on...
I got Little Nemo.
It must be depend on when you go
in
there or
Google
what you
land,
do.
Yeah. What device you're on.
Interesting. 107th anniversary.
I bet it's the device, because I'm...
You don't think if I reloaded this, I'd get...
I bet if you went on your laptop, it would be that.
This says 107th anniversary of Little Nemo Adventures in Slumberland.
Is that with a pull down? Oh, yeah.
It's about a kid who falls asleep
sure
and has
enough,
adventures
I got
in Dreamland.
I got Little Nemo. What happens if you... Oh. Oh, I get more adventures.
There's more.
Oh, there's a drop down.
And drop
there's
down
multiple
again.
Drop downs. Oh, look at the thing. It's all animated
cool.
And it moves.
And it's jumping through the thing.
No wonder it's not on your device.
Oh, be sure to go to google.com tomorrow, guys.
Or today.
Oh, very cool. Oh, and then he drops down in there. Look at that. Now his bed is walking across this.
This is riveting.
Skyscraper.
This is really cool.
He is. Oh, he's perilously hanging. It's a cliffhanger. Oh, he fell.
He fell.
He's still falling. Oh, my gosh. What's going to do? Oh, he fell in the water. And then he fell out of bed. He must have woke up. Oh, wait, there's more. Oh, no, that's
no, there's not.
That's it. Well, what does
awesome.
This one do?
What's the one on the
Nothing.
iPad do?
Nothing. As I said, that's probably why.
Oh, no! But that must be Little Nemo in there. So, how about the iPhone?
I'm checking on my Android.
This is riveting podcast material.
I don't know who this guy is.
On mobile devices.
Apparently mobile devices is old.
And an iPad is considered a mobile device.
Okay, well, for you've got to get to a computer.
Well, you
to
know
see
why?
This.
Because
Google
this,
something from a computer.
The iPhone and the iPad won't do flash animation, and that's what this is. So.
Well, and,
yeah, haven't
neither,
you seen that?
Neither
meme?
Would the Android.
Android doesn't do a flash. Well, some of them
it
do.
Does.
Yeah.
It does?
Yeah. Some of them do.
Mine does. Haven't you seen that meme?
Winsor McCay.
Uh-uh. It's all the superheroes, and there's Superman, and there's Wonder Woman, and there's Green Hornet, and then there's Spider-Man going, it doesn't do Flash. It's silly.
All right. You got Chrissy's email.
I got
Chrissy's. Have we sufficiently killed enough?
You killed enough time that I was able to log into my Google after being distracted by the full-length feature film on their opening page.
Very cool. Go to there on a computer.
Chrissy writes, Dear Vortex Boys, hi, guys. Just going to get straight into the reviews this week. Embrace the darkness. Did anyone else giggle at the end of part one when Charlie said, you've lost your eyes? And it wasn't quite the dramatic cliffhanger they were probably going for. I know Olyensa and Ferris losing their eyes to the Cimmerans was a serious situation, but saying someone lost their eyes just sounded like something your grandmother would say when she misplaced her glasses. The time of the Daleks.
Really?
This could have been eye-blindingly terrible. Daleks wanting to eradicate Shakespeare from time? Don't they have anything more menacing to do? But rather than being one huge groaner of a story, I actually liked it quite a bit. Yep, that's all I have to say for that one. Neverland. Wait. I ran out of time to listen to this one this week.
Are we still reading this?
But it's one of my favorite Big Finish stories. Oddly enough, Chrissy, so did I. And after being properly scolded by the schoolmaster... masters on the show, we have decided to not review Neverland this week.
I believe the decision was made between myself and Keith.
Yes.
Keith asked me first, and I said, ask Glenn.
You would have plowed on through it, and we'd have showed up here in another 15 more minutes, and we would have started recording this show. And Keith's got to work dayside tomorrow.
I didn't know that at the time. He very slyly kept that information from me. He just
it's
said,
it's not like I did that. Why do you think about maybe pushing that one off later and doing that? I'm like, well, ask Glenn.
That was my reasoning.
And then he came back and said, Glenn's upset.
I did not say.
Well, I was. I said, okay, I'm not happy with that. But
and I'm not allowed to schedule three big
you're
finishes.
You're not allowed to schedule three big finish episodes anymore.
So, yeah, funny story with this. I told them this off mic, but I'll reiterate it for you guys. I have been going through and very purposefully scheduling the Paul McGann Big Finish in blocks of three. There was a reason for this.
I get to call you something.
Yes,
again.
You do.
I'm going to use that word twice in this podcast.
I think both times we did three chunks, he was up to the wire.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, he was.
Getting it done.
No, one of those, with the McGanns, I was always set. It was
no, because you haven't listened to
it. It was Evelyn. It was Blood Tide. I still haven't finished. I still haven't gone back.
You did not finish Blood Tide.
I'm not saying you didn't
There was a McGann set that he was listening to the day of.
Yes.
Right, well, that's not unusual, though, but... I'm sorry, it isn't.
I'm not going to chide you for that. As long as it's done by deadline, it's okay.
Yeah. I freely admit, this was... After giving you guys grief about it, you got 3 weeks, get them
for
done.
For 3 weeks.
And
that's why I didn't mention anything about Dayside.
I fell down on the job and dropped the ball. It is totally my fault. But I've been scheduling these in blocks of three specifically to make them fit a specific pattern so that we could get up to spare parts. And then,
oh, it's what you're thinking, listeners.
And then do spare parts at part of a Cyberman archive. And I thought this is going to be perfect because at Horns and Nyman, we did that on the Nyman archive. This is going to, and we've got three more McGanns, and then we get to the next block of McGann. Now, Glenn and I have stowed outside my apartment for 5 hours at a stretch discussing, I haven't even listened to it yet, discussing how awesome spare parts is and how he can't wait to get to it and how excited he is because Peter Davison is so great in spare parts. I know Peter Davison is in this story, but for some reason, when I get sit down in front of the Vortex schedule, and I look at the wiki, and I look at the books, and I look at the scheduling of all this stuff, it's a Paul McGann story. Always has been, always will be. I don't know why. So from the very beginning, all of the Paul McGann stuff that has been scheduled since we started this podcast has been done with the intent of getting spare parts to not be in the middle of a set or you know, have it separately off on its own. And it wasn't until tonight when I knew Glenn was going to be mad at me, and I went back and looked at it and went, why did I do this? And then I realized, I don't know why I did this. So, yeah.
What was that?
Leaning on something that doesn't have a thing.
Gotcha.
So, we're going to push Neverland off, doing some further research in the Big Finish. We've realized that...
Now that I've listened to it. And there's a big cliffhanger, and I'm waiting to listen
honestly,
to the next
one. I don't know why I didn't say anything, because I've heard Neverland. I heard Zagreus before, and why I didn't say, hey,
okay,
wait,
you're both
two
dummies. I won't use the harsh one that I used earlier.
I figured he had a bigger plan in
you're
mind.
You're both dummies.
I did have a bigger plan in mind. It just didn't turn out to be...
It was just the wrong plan.
Yeah.
Keith, from here on out, feel free to speak up.
So
I've got the book, but I don't want to spoil myself, so I stay away from reading about him until after I've listened to the episodes.
Zagreus is the end of my line. So, I thought
that's it.
I haven't listened to Shizuro, or I started Shizuro, or however you pronounce it.
What's that in the? Is that a Paul McGann?
That's the next one for Paul McGann.
Ah.
And so I don't. I thought this was some big plan that Zagreus and Shizuro and whatever's after that makes sense.
This is where we need Dr. Phil to not be busy, because he needs to be sitting in feedback going, what are you guys doing? Why
don't
you do
review that?
You should do this together. So once again, the Big Finish...
or just direct messages. We don't have to air that on the podcast.
Because we love airing our dirty laundry. You guys are idiots. Yeah, we know. Just me, though. Once again, Big Finish has managed to trip me up with the way their scheduling works. So we're going to push Neverland and Zagreus together onto another podcast, just another episode, because they fit together.
So, Chrissy, we're not going to read the finish. The end
yeah,
of this,
Chrissy, we're not going to finish
it,
your email
it does give
since
away
it does,
some things. So.
Discuss.
So we're giving you extra
time, listener.
I'm forcing
Sean to read it so that he can be spoiled on it.
Well, that part
and it doesn't really spoil anything.
No, it didn't really spoil anything for me. That part I already knew. But and he did that.
I spoiled it, too.
But so you've got some extra time.
He should have listened.
We've spoiled some for you.
and I have some extra time to listen to it as well. And our listeners have some extra time. So,
if you didn't make it to Neverland, listener, guess what? You get another shot at it.
I think that's why we didn't get as much feedback.
They're still listening right now.
Because they're trying to work through all three stories.
I gotta get it done before this comes out.
Try to send in feedback, and they just didn't get it done.
I'm sorry.
So,
you know, I was going to say, I was gonna come to the fence and say, no, that's probably, no, but it is. If that's the reason, Sean. That's exactly that's one more. One more.
So,
I feel about this big right now.
Right? We plan.
Here's another thing you should think about. How about all of those listeners that have listen to it, and they're anxiously excited and waiting to hear our review of Neverland, and it's not going to come tonight.
Spoiler, sweetie.
Building the anticipation.
Oh, so speaking of embracing the darkness. Wait, were we? No, we weren't. But
embrace the darkness.
Dun dun dun.
This was my favorite of the three.
The Doctor and Charlie.
No, it really was. Oh, don't do that too. Don't do that. But it was my favorite of the three I was required to listen to this week. The three I got through this week.
I stopped on Wednesday from finishing.
I'm not going to stop
Neverland.
nor should you. I deserve to be badgered.
All right, read the synopsis. So, no, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say I would have finished Wednesday.
Well, but yeah, you've also heard him before too, so you could have come to the table and said, "Okay, I'll just send this from him."
I didn't remember. I couldn't conjure this story from him.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. The doc until I listened to it.
Yeah.
The Doctor and Charlie travel to the remote Cimmerian system to unravel the mystery of its sun, but darkness has already embraced the scientific base on Cimmera 4. In
Cimmera.
Cimmera 4.
Cimmera. I said it wrong when I read Chrissy's email. My bad.
Well, it's Cimmerian.
Yeah.
That's how they said it.
I still planted the seed for Cimmerian. You to say it wrong.
But it's IA.
It's Cimmerian.
Cimmeria.
Cimmeria. Yeah. Isn't that what I said? Yeah.
It's like Ghostbusters' ancient Babylonian gods.
Cimmeria. Yes.
Cimmeria.
Yes.
Okay. In more ways than one. In a fight for survival, the Doctor must use all his wits against the deadly artificial life form and the ancient race whose return to the Cimmerian system threatens suffering and death on an apocalyptic scale.
I'll do it. Dun, dun, dun. You didn't like this one. I did.
I didn't like this one.
I like this one.
I like this one, but the resolution.
I wanted to like this one.
Huh?
I didn't like the resolution.
What do you mean I liked the resolution? It was great.
It was too tidy. It was too easy.
Oh, good.
We built this entire story of, oh no, this.
Yeah, and it's kind of refreshing to have that surprise of, oh, it's us. I loved that. It was that. Oh wait, it's the whole thing was a big misunderstanding. That's what I liked about it. I thought it was very, very cool.
It felt to me like we built this up and we don't know how to resolve it.
No, it wasn't that at all. It was this whole build. It was this whole mis. It starts out as this probably one of the creepiest big finish audios I've
very
ever
creepy.
Listened to. And they build this mystery nicely and through this whole thing all the way up to, oh, my gosh, they're coming in their solar sails and they're coming here and they're going to come back. And they're, you know, so much for this being an ancient legend. It's really, they're really going to come back. And in reality, it's actually, they keep calling, what do they call them? They call them the Solarians.
Yes.
And it's Simonians, isn't it? Simorians?
Cimmerians.
Cimmerians. Cimmerians, Solarians. Oh, yeah, Cimmerians on the planet. So we've got these two different names. But it's really what the humans called them, and so it's not it was this whole mystery.
But doesn't
what
answer
is this
anything.
Ancient race that's going to come back and wipe out, you know, bring it back and wipe out this civilization? And it all comes down to the fact that there was this plague that essentially divided the race, and part of them ran off, and part of them shut out the darkness so that they wouldn't come back. And it was
I felt they didn't explain the plague enough. Well,
no, not at all.
They didn't explain
it at all.
No,
they totally talked about the plague. Yes, they did.
I don't remember a plague.
Yes, he says the plague came and it wiped out, and that's why they shut out the darkness, because then the plague couldn't spread anymore.
Yeah, but they didn't explain why some left. Yeah, okay, but still, they set this up where it's this force that's coming to take the light.
They don't explain the force that comes to take the light.
No.
That's what they set up.
No, the force.
Yes, it is. That's why they set the eyes.
No, the force that was taking the light was going to. No, it's the force that was going to ignite the light. The force that's bringing the light.
No, what was going to be ignited was the sun's.
Right. By the humans, not yes. by what was coming yes. back.
But right. they were so terrified of that, and they never explained why the sun went out. Why?
Yes, they did. They evolved. Oh. No, they evolved. And they created no, this particle element.
That's how they combated it. That's yes. how they protected themselves. But
by
they don't
burning
explain,
the sun out.
But they don't explain.
Yes, they did.
No, they did explain.
They totally explained that. That's what it was. And it mutated to a point where then they could suddenly start taking out like electronic equipment and stuff. That was the whole point of that, was this species that had this, I don't remember, this was some sort of particles they emitted. And that's what took the sun out. That's what, but they were also healers, so they could heal,
well, yes.
you know, which gave the eyesight back, which I thought was a very cool little
convenient.
Twist, too, is that they took it away, but they also, I mean, it was this particles that took it away, but it was the reason that it came back. It was this whole misunderstanding, and they pointed out that it was a mistake.
They didn't understand the humans.
They didn't understand that they were well-meaning.
I liked all that.
So that was the whole story. It was this whole misunderstanding. And then there's a misunderstanding of who the real threat is. The real threat is not a threat. It's
so
more
there
than,
is no threat.
Exactly.
Right.
That was what was cool about the story.
Because they set it up as there is a threat.
But that's building the mystery of the thing. That's what makes it a good story.
I think there's something there.
And then the cool twist of it all is there really wasn't anything to be afraid of.
What I thought would have been better was halfway through, they thought this threat
you know what?
Was coming.
You put this in your cookie cutter thing of good guy, bad guy, good versus evil is what you did. And you can't appreciate the fact that somebody thought outside the box.
I appreciate
and said,
the fact that
hey,
what they
this
think,
is the twist.
But I feel there's no resolution.
There was a resolution.
There wasn't. There was
now.
There
now,
was the two teaming up, and then
only,
okay. Now what?
Here's the only thing that I will poo-poo about this story is you get right up to the end, and then you get a narrative of what happened through the Doctor and Charlie. Well, we sent them back here, and these guys
show don't tell.
Exactly. Show no tell. And so that was my only problem with that. But I could tell that they were coming up on their time, and they were like, okay, well, I'm just going to wrap this up real quick and tell you what happened off screen. I'm fine with that, but that was my least favorite part of this whole story is that we kind of summed it up quickly at the end so that we could get out of it.
I thought the entire ending was rushed.
I kind of have somewhere in between you. I liked the story. I liked the idea of it.
I'm not saying I didn't like the story. I like the ideas. I like some elements of it.
Again, you want the cookie cutter good versus bad.
I think it would have been great to see that nice twist, bring that threat up sooner, that twist. And then
the threat didn't need to come up, sir. It needed
to
be that big climactic.
Then the two team up to clean up to whoever actually destroyed and brought this plague.
But there was no, well, the thing
they didn't explain the plague well.
Yes, they don't explain the plague, and I'm fine with that because there's a lot of plagues throughout the history of civilizations that we really don't know where it came from. It just happened to ravage. It's not the origin of the plague. It's the story of what the plague did. It's the evil of the plague is what's the story of it. So I don't care where this plague came from specifically. I know that's probably where you guys are being let down is you didn't get the explanation of where this plague came from.
No.
But I don't need that.
I feel like there was a plague. All of the.
Does anybody know where the bubonic plague came from?
It came from rats. So much,
that's how it spread, right? But where did it come from?
Well, it's
exactly.
Not so much
but
that,
it doesn't make any of those stories from the dark times
where,
in England
where
any
left,
less compelling.
Where I felt
that's what
left
I'm saying.
Down is not so much from that, but the fact that all of the information that we are given comes in the fourth episode in an info dump. We've got the Doctor and Charlie visiting this alien and returning the body and sad scene, and the Doctor's admitting, I screwed up. I ignited the suns.
Which was fantastic.
It's something they do a
climactic
lot with the
moment.
Eighth Doctor.
Yes, yeah. It was.
Which I'm almost to the point where it's like, I made the comment on the podcast many times back where I kind of like seeing him screw up, but why does it always have to be the Eighth Doctor?
I'm so upset that we're not talking about Neverland tonight, too, because there's a point that I wanted to point out in that.
But
go ahead.
So they go to talk to these guys, and the being's like, oh, we screwed up when we took their, you know, we took their sight.
Yeah.
We didn't understand. Okay, I'm fine with all that. That's great stuff. But then we take this eating of the memory pill and scraping the whatever residual stuff off the bottom of the frying pan, and we're going to eat this. And all of a sudden, they get this enhanced memory of what happened. And so there's this massive info dump 15 minutes before the end, explaining that there was a plague, which they didn't really cover in enough detail. It was just a plague.
It was a blanket answer. We need a reason.
It was a cause for the effect. They didn't go any further than that. They could have. I'm not saying that I needed a technical
explanation. The way they acted is they were afraid of something more than a plague.
But they're still healing.
Yes. And they were afraid of more than something than a plague.
But they don't flesh that out.
They were afraid of what was bringing the plague. Even this, it had been enough time passed, and they convey this, that the Sumerians don't even know what the Solarians are.
They don't know what they're afraid of. They just know they're afraid of something coming.
Is going to wipe them out. So they don't know that it's even part of their race.
So that's still scary. And then we go back, and we're firing warning shots, and they're still coming. And then all of a sudden,
they have no reason to be as so aggressive as they were.
Yeah, either. Let's try talking to them. Okay. But at no point in time did this enter the doctor's mind before that.
Don't you suppose the firing upon was... They're firing warning shots, for one thing. They weren't actually firing upon the ship. I mean, they were...
Why not try comm signals?
But here's the thing. Well, they don't know what they're doing. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Why didn't the doctor say, let's try talking to you? At no point in time did any of our so-called heroes...
Well, the ship fires first because the...
Rossum,
which is a fantastic element to this that we're pulling this out. Rossum was incredible.
Rossum was absolutely
fantastic. A security system that is, you know, has to rationalize certain elements of things, but first and foremost, it's a rescue ship. And that was, I like the firing of the onto the thing because that was its first priority was security. So I didn't have a problem with that at all.
But the whole, she's giving it an order saying we have to be gone in an hour. And it's going to question her because, well, I've got safety protocols to run. Okay, but your whole thing is rescue, and we're telling you there is a direct threat to the ship. We need to be gone before this point. And she had to go over it 3 or 4 times. It was one of those things that it became convenient when the plot needed it to be convenient. It did things probably wouldn't have done.
I disagree.
In a real-world situation because the plot needed to stretch that out for a little bit longer. But then when we got to that point, it was, let's hurry up and wrap it up. Then we get this big resolution at the end and this huge twist of the fact that this invading alien force isn't actually an alien force. They're not actually malevolent. They're not actually evil. They're archaeologists, and they've come home to find out what happened. Oh, wow, fantastic. And then nothing. It's done. We get all of the further information from that in another info dump. It happened off-screen.
Again, that info dump. Bothered me a little bit.
The last episode of this just unraveled. The previous three were really well done. I agree with Keith. I'm a little tired of the whispering aliens and Bigfoot. This is the thing that I thought was really frustrating for this. We've got Embrace the Darkness. We've got these creatures that have taken away the light. And we get a cliffhanger with your eyes, or you've misplaced your eyes, or whatever the line was.
You've lost your eyes.
You've lost your eyes. At no point in time did they react to that. When it was happening, we get a lot of really, I don't know about you guys, but the sound mix on mine was
screaming.
Unbearably loud.
Really?
In the first half.
I didn't have any issue with it either.
A lot of weird sound effects, and just I had to keep adjusting the volume because they would screech, and I would have to turn it down, and then somebody would start talking, and I'd have to cautiously turn it back up. And then I'd have to go further to be able to listen to it, and then I had to go back down again. I don't know what the deal was
with that. I never had that problem.
But so we get all these sound effects and everything that's going on. And they're talking about they're taking the light, and the terror of that. It's like, okay, great, because how better to do it, a story that's set primarily in the dark, than audio? I mean, this is fantastic. I'm all kinds of jazzed and excited for this. And then Charlie makes a comment, well, you've lost your eyes. Oh, it wasn't them turning out the lights. It was actually our eyes getting burned out. And then they talk about the pain. It's like, you didn't notice that when the lights were going out, everybody started screaming that it hurt?
They did talk about the pain before,
but it
Charlie mentioned the eyes. So they dropped the hints.
But I'm sorry, that's kind of a major thing. I would immediately think,
going back,
it's getting dark and I'm in insane pain, I would make the correlation that something's happened to my eyes.
I got the impression that the woman knew it happened. The one guy was in denial because he was didn't understand why the other guy was crying, and the other guy went bat blank crazy because he lost his eyes and he knew it.
I agree with you, but it just
seems even our other two crew members were going crazy as well.
Well, there were only three.
I know. The one guy
completely
totally gone. The other two, you get the impression through that one episode
hanging on
that they're
thread.
Really doing yeah. that. Yeah, they're going insane as well.
Trying to deal with this pain they
and
had
they
in
did
their
take
eyes.
Out the lights as well as take out their eyes.
They did
because
take
the
out
first
the
thing that's going is the lights in the ship, and that's before the screams of pain and them noticing what's going on. So these particles are actually taking the ship that they're working or the base that they're working on, taking those down first. It's the eyes second, because when Charlie shows up, the only light source
is from her pod.
Is from her pod.
Right.
At all. So.
I don't know. It just seemed weird to me that these are supposed to be scientists and engineers and people working on a project to ignite a string of suns.
Who they admit that they did not pay a lick of attention to.
Well, that professor was boring. I didn't want to pay a lick of attention to it until I realized, oh, wait, this is part of the info dump. I should tune into this. There might be something important in here.
But the one guy got it through.
Got it. Okay.
Osmosis. So,
I don't know. It just seems strange that nobody made the connection that I'm in an intense amount of pain and the lights are going out.
Oh, it's my eyes. I got the impression, like Glenn, that the lights went out first.
I also got the impression that their eyes didn't like go away. When I visualized that their eyes were gone, it was kind of like the eyeballs are still there, but it was like black over. You ever seen the?
Yeah.
That was how
I visualized. Eyeballs gone completely.
Because, I thought it was more of
it had to be healing. Yeah,
see, I don't know the way Charlie says it.
Your eyes are gone. You've lost your eyes. Yeah,
almost because if it was anything,
but it goes back to Chrissy's point of how she says it was more of a. I think if they had empty eye sockets, she'd have been a little more frantic about that. But that's what gave me the impression that maybe it was more of a.
Maybe they. Like the creatures, they who don't have eyes, maybe they modified their faces so it was just smooth
or something.
I could see that.
Yeah,
maybe.
I didn't have this horror. I didn't have this.
They sounded like grays.
I didn't have
the doctors describing them
a little bit.
Yeah, but I still imagine Heartless from Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, that's what he was telling me. The way she says that, I didn't get the impression that it was empty. It wasn't something horrific.
I would just say at this point in their travels, Charlie has seen enough that if it had just been a humanoid with black eyes in a black room, it wouldn't maybe have been a big deal. Or if they were grayed out, like they'd gone blind or something.
She says, you lost your eye. I mean, Chrissy's right. The way she puts it, it was almost a little comedic. But
I loved Rossum. Pretty much any scene Rossum was in. And once again, Paul McGann, for me, is the pardon the pun, he's the bright, shining moment of this.
Until Neverland. We'll get there eventually.
There was so much
that I wanted to talk about tonight, Sean.
Sorry.
So much about the Eighth Doctor that you and I were probably going to get into a fight. Fist to cuffs. Because
throwing down that gauntlet now, huh?
Yeah.
Any of the scenes between Paul McGann and Rossum were fantastic.
They were the way
that he's...
Even Charlie. Charlie's chiding in there as well. I love that.
And I'm still kind of on the fence. I really, really, really like Charlie initially. And as time has gone on and we've listened to more of these stories, there are moments where I really like her. And then there are other moments where it's like, you're starting to wear thin. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. But there's something about the shtick that's starting to grow old for me.
She almost has a Rose feel to me. I don't know why, but she has a Rose feel to me.
I thought she's been strong from the beginning.
I think I agree too.
No, definitely written strongly. Rossum, by the way, is a fun little play from I don't remember the guy's name now. RUR is a Czech play, which is Rossum's Universal Robots. And this play, which was written back in the early 20s, it was the first time the word robot had been brought into the English language.
Yes.
It was Russian, Czechoslovakian language, Russian language. But, I mean, it was the first time that the word appeared and all of a sudden kind of got globbed onto.
But didn't get translated. When it got translated to English, it stayed robot.
Yeah.
Karl Kepik.
It's also...
Rosamund.
a funny enough play. Carl Rossum is a character in the animated Batman series who builds androids, android duplicates, voiced by, and I'm going to blank now because I don't remember his name, the actor who built the android replicants in Blade Runner.
Huh.
He's voiced by the same character, or by the same actor. What is his name?
I don't know. He was...
Newhart.
Yeah,
he was my brother Daryl.
Larry and his brother Daryl and his other brother Daryl.
Anyway, so I thought that was kind of cool that the robot was an acronym of Rossum. And I was like, hey, that's kind of a cool little...
I like the drop
keep that
of
torch going.
Banana, where the doctor says, I have no bananas today.
Oh, that was funny.
Which, to me, is a is foreshadowing to the later doctor's obsession with bananas.
It could be. But more than
but according
the
to Wiki,
it, it's just,
is reference to a 20th century song, Yes, We Have No Bananas.
Yeah, that's where that line comes from, is Yes, We Have No Bananas. But just the way the robot asked the question, don't you have anything to submit to this? I was like, yes, I have no bananas.
Here's an interesting tidbit.
This is very Paul McGann's Eighth Doctor.
Here's an interesting tidbit from the book, The Big Finish Companion, Volume 1. The story included a Salarian, which the Doctor identifies as sounding familiar. This is because Nick himself thought it rang a bell completely, overlooking the similarity with the name Silurian. Which was my first thought was, the Solarians, that sounded really, really familiar to me too. And I thought, was this another race in Doctor Who? And it wasn't until I just now read that I was like, oh yeah, it's Silurian is the similarity.
The story here is, I don't know, I'm going to throw a Star Trek reference in here. I apologize. The Vulcans, who used to be warlike and savage, and then Surak came along and said, you know what, we should be peaceful and logical. And everybody went, yes, you're right, let's do that. And a bunch of the people went, screw that noise, I don't want to do that. And they left and went on to become the Romulans and are now, you know, at war with each other. Or at least in a heightened state of tension in the relationship. So when we got to the reveal, it was like, oh, cool. That's been done. But I still thought it was fun that they brought these guys back. I don't know. There's something about the end of this story that just didn't work for me. Like I said, we're dealing with this race that's all about darkness, and it's all audio. This should be phenomenal. This is one of those, like, Whispers of Terror. We're dealing with an audio adventure that has at its core, and with Whispers of Terror, it's an audio element because the monster is sound. In this one, it's a monster that is putting out the light, so we're constantly in the dark. And there's something undeniably, fundamentally cool about that. I just don't think it was handled terribly well. And I was really disappointed because, you know, it's written by... Nicholas Briggs, who I kind of expected better from. When I found that, I was like, oh, really? I don't know. It fell flat to me for some reason. Mm. I wish I could put into words what specifically bothered me about it. And I can't. It didn't feel right when we got to the end of the resolution that there should have been something more. And I agree with Keith. I don't think the plague was really... Again, I didn't need it to be developed. But it was such a dropped line that there was a plague and that's why this happened that I honestly thought that this race that was coming, even after they revealed that, oh, we've come home, that they were the ones that were causing the problems in the first place. That was a civil war that they had left. And I had to go back and, oh, no, it was, okay, plague. I actually went back and re-listened to that to make sure that I got it. Because
I thought it was pretty clear. And I thought they spent adequate time on the idea of the plague. So
I don't know. Maybe it was just me.
I don't know. This was the best of the three for me. I said it before, and I'll say it again.
I would disagree.
Got problems with this next one, too.
How would you rank this one in comparison to the other McGanns that we've done?
This is one of my favorite McGanns right now.
Really?
It's better than...
Better than Minuet in Hell?
Yeah, but I didn't hate Minuet in Hell. But yeah, it's better than Minuet.
I agree. Even though the ending is Rust, this is much better than Minuet.
I think Chimes of Midnight and one in that first run that we did are still my favorites. What was that one?
Storm Warning's the one you really like. Sword of Orion.
Yes, Sword of Orion.
Oh, yes. The Cybermen one. That one's... Yeah.
Those still rank very high, but this one's up there.
So this is in the low end of the highs, high end of the mids?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Next.
The time of the Daleks. The Doctor is confused enough when he finds that Charlie has never heard of William Shakespeare. But when he travels to Britain in the near future and discovers a leader obsessed with watching Shakespeare's plays and the Daleks wanting to help her, the mystery grows more sinister. Can the Daleks really claim to be the masters of time?
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, Sean liked it.
I did like it. I didn't like it as well as
Kate
I could
said
have.
It was one that told me earlier in the week. It was one of the best Dalek stories he'd
Maybe
ever.
I colored your view of it.
I don't know. Maybe.
I think of The Big Finish, this is the best Dalek story we've heard. Oh.
No, I don't think he weights your opinion that much.
No.
I don't think
there was much better. No, you're right. There were much better Dalek stories in Big Finish than this. There's been
that we've listened
stories.
To and reviewed?
There's been better stories in Classic Who than this.
That we've listened to and reviewed?
There's been better Davros stories in Doctor Who than this.
Well, Davros isn't in this. You can't include
No,
that.
But I'm saying of the Davros Dalek stories, which are usually the worst of the Dalek stories, besides Genesis.
I enjoyed this story. Of course, this is my this was also my first Dalek Big Finish story that I listened to. Of the many things I liked was the Dalek. It kind of has a Victory of the Daleks start to it, where the Daleks aren't being themselves, but it's early revealed that they've got a bigger plan. And Shakespeare doesn't matter to them. They're just giving the lines. They're lying. I thought it was great. The fact that at the end of this, when everything is cycling back on itself, and this is, I think, a pretty decent story of time folding in on itself.
No. It's not, because it's paradoxical. It's not... It's not time folding back on itself to correct something or to fix an element. It's just we've just created a different sort of timeline here.
It's a loop.
Yeah.
Well,
we're just going to live with. And that was...
Time folding isn't the correct word.
That was horrible. It was still time folding over in itself, but it was poorly done. It was poorly, poorly done. And poorly explained. I mean, there wasn't... Talk about a quick resolution on this one. This one was another one that I felt that they utilized the narrative at the end of the thing and simply what's going to happen to fix this loop? Oh, the Time Lords will come fix it sometime. We've put them in this little temporal nexus now where they can't get out. And they'll just be there until the Time Lords decide that they're bored with, or they get bored and ask the Time Lords to come help them. I mean, that's, come on. Seriously?
Except.
I do like the name drop, though.
That was set up at the beginning.
It was set up at the beginning. But the problem is,
and the fact that this
the problem
was planned
is
long
that,
ago.
That should have been a cause and effect type thing, but it doesn't really show you the cause and effect. It's like it happened here, and then there's it happens here. So I get now that's what was happening there at the beginning. But the problem with that issue is that the pilot escapes in the first one with the strategist. In this one, the pilot is what causes the and they don't deliver that. I mean, we still get you'd hear the lines, the Shakespeare lines in there, but maybe they withheld that little piece of it from us so that
That's what I got the impression.
Get tipped off. Maybe that's what it meant. But I had a problem with that because then it doesn't feel like this is what happened here, and we see that one time in the monitors too. Well, the Doctor and Charlie see it in the monitors. I presume they're seeing it because. They're actually describing what's happening,
right?
When they're on the ship, so doesn't work. It just doesn't work that well.
I guess I didn't have a problem with it.
I think the opening when I was listening to it tonight, I kept going back to that open, going, okay. Once again, the name of the episode is The Time of the Daleks. There are Daleks in the story. I'm not going to be surprised by that, but I was surprised that they kind of. Blew it right at the beginning with we get a quote from Shakespeare and then we get Daleks. And as we went on, I kept thinking, the reveal of them working with the prime minister, whatever she was, the general dictator, would have been a much bigger reveal, even though, again, we know they're coming, but it would have been a more effective reveal had that opening not been there. And I kept thinking that all the way until the end when I realized, oh, this is where the loop's going and this is what happened and the general's the one who was quoting Shakespeare and is the pilot.
Right, right.
Okay, now I see why they did that, because you had to have that book ended.
Which, in the fact that the pilot gets killed after the loop, or on the other side.
The pilot is one of the ones that survives and goes through.
No, that's why they need the pilot.
That's why they need the pilot.
Because it got killed.
Because the pilot gets killed.
So that's why.
The pilot was a first through, is what that was.
And was killed.
That's right.
Because he was a first through.
Which one fell down backed into the Roman? That was another thing.
Which, I loved that.
No, I hated it. You know why?
What?
Because it's one little small instance, because I'm sure Paul Cornell said, hey, we should throw that into this Roman story. That's the problem I have with it.
That tells me they had a plan. Listen, it was in the Horns of Nymon story.
If they had been clever enough to drop all of the different events they looked at, Hitler.
Okay, I agree. That would have been awesome.
But it was like, oh, it's like Paul Cornell is planning this, and he says, oh, there's a Roman story. Hey, why don't you throw a Dalek in there, and it'll be a nice little nod, and people will go, oh, I remember that from the episode. Yeah, that would have been cool if they had set that up and done it in different episodes.
It would have been great if they had.
No, it would have worked. It would have been good. Now that was just like hey, we're going to cleverly put this little Easter egg in here.
I don't know about that.
That was ridiculous.
Three episodes ago?
There's no forethought of that, though. More than that, because other doctors between.
Well, yeah. Three
McGanns. But, I mean, it would have been a long time if you sat down and you were a subscriber.
Well,
it would have been almost a year before you heard the next set of McGanns.
And you probably wouldn't have remembered that.
I disagree because we've gotten Daleks in several stories, not just the one. And they do reference that every time frame that he looked at, the Roman and the World War II and this, there has been a Dalek dropped in to several of these McGann stories as we've gone on that had explanation.
Point them out to me, because you know what? I went back and checked Wiki, and they said the only one that relates is the one in the Roman story, Nymon story. Yes. They said unless you count Victory of the Daleks, which doesn't count because it's forward retro.
Not Victory.
Backward retro. Backward retro.
Go
ahead. I looked. Because I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be, oh, where are all these Easter eggs at? I caught the one. Where are the others? And I went back and looked, and there's none.
I could have sworn I've heard Daleks in other stories.
Maybe they're later Eighth Doctor stories.
If there were, none of the wikis or any of the sites that really chronicle all this very well, none of them.
Is it in the book?
Now, yeah. No. You know what?
Go to the book. You're the one that yells at me for going to Wiki. I thought for sure as we went through the McGanns that there were other McGann stories that we listened to that had a random Dalek.
Here we go. Paul Cornell asked Justin to give him a Dalek falling through time for his Roman story, which turned into Seasons of Fear number 30. That's it. The only one referenced in here. So yeah,
that still tells me Paul Cornell thought, hey, let's try to
Paul
tie these
Cornell
in.
Paul Cornell thought, hey, this is a clever gimmicky idea.
Well,
that doesn't make cool to me, because cool to me would have been if you're going to put the three specific, we're looking into the different areas of time, just having the one, it's like I felt real empty, especially when I looked and said, oh, there is no Easter eggs for these.
I agree,
ones.
It would have been cool, but I was fine with it. I thought it was just a gimmick.
I chalked it up to gimmick.
If they had tied in, I'd have been excited about it.
Now
I kind of have to side now with Glenn that it feels a little gimmick. Now
they do drop maybe apocalypse element.
Well, yeah,
hints in there, which that was kind of cool that at least we called back to that. But that's because this is the fourth in the Dalek Empire series, and so we're. All along, we've been using little pieces of the small thread that's been going through.
Well, and that honestly is...
And I did read online that the Dalek Empire standalone series does... This sets up the events from this.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, so...
Well, this or Neverland?
This one. So all of the Dalek Empire series within the main line.
Mm-hmm.
The Dalek Empire proper, what they call it.
Yeah.
Sets up the Dalek Empire standalone series. At least the first one that came out. Which Sean said he wasn't sure. He thought it was kind of its own thing, but it does link in very
the Dalek Empire standalone, for lack of a better term for it.
There's a couple of them,
but those apparently are set in the Doctor Who universe, but do not feature the Doctor.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's just about Daleks running amok across the.
But the events of these three stories, from what I understand from reading, set up everything that goes on in the first Dalek Empire series. So, standalone.
I think that for me, the problem with this is we'd already done it. The story was told in Mutant Phase. That we got.
I didn't think about this. It was similar, and I hadn't thought about that until you told me that earlier. Go ahead. I know my answer.
Because Mutant Phase, we get the Daleks, and we find out that there's a self-fulfilling prophecy, basically, that you know, they have to be here to do this, but they're the ones that caused this in the first place. There's this big time loop that they get stuck in. And so we're going through the events of this, and then we get the huge reveal at the end that, oh, wow, this is what causes it. And it's like, but we just did that. I mean, it was a Fifth Doctor story, so it wasn't immediately, you know, on the heels of this one. But it was Dalek Empire. Well, Dalek Empire 3.
Dalek phase
did this.
Yeah,
no.
Of the Daleks,
I was thinking that Apocalypse came before or came after, but it didn't come before.
It was second.
It's the Sixth Doctor, but the Fifth Doctor.
And like I said, I liked the fact this one had a lot of payoff. There are things that I liked. This
What's
story.
The payoff? Because I sure
well,
didn't get any.
The fact that we get the Dalek invasion of Gallifrey in Apocalypse Element.
Yes.
And now we're finally seeing the results
yes.
of that.
Yes, okay, gotcha.
Okay, that's a payoff.
Agreed.
The fact that we've had a reference, and I don't remember which the previous story was, that the Doctor mentioned Shakespeare, and somebody goes, what? And so now we're getting kind of the payoff.
Oh, see, I didn't remember that. That's a nice little
nugget. I don't remember that either.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
It was a one line and gone.
Oh,
I
didn't recall that.
I think it was the one...
That was the other thing that kept.
Right before,
that was certainly the thing that kept bothering me about this story. Sorry, I shouldn't interrupt you. Is we're dropping this whole Charlie can't remember Shakespeare. Okay, Shakespeare's been taken out of time, and his works are disappearing. People are forgetting who he is. Okay, I'm fine with that.
That story I thought was fantastic.
Well, it could have been.
Yeah.
Here's
take
the
Daleks out of it, and it would have been great.
Why does
that
this,
is exactly
that's the Daleks.
Why
the,
does the no? Why
the,
does
the
this,
weak point of
why
this
does
is Daleks.
This dictator chick? Why does she want Shakespeare so bad? So can somebody explain that to me?
Because she thinks she's better than everyone.
She thinks she's better than everyone, and she doesn't think Shakespeare
not solid
should be
enough.
She doesn't think Shakespeare should be consumed
not
by the
solid
masses.
Enough of a character. You get well, the way I, you guys just said
she,
it's not
she,
a good
she,
element.
She wants
stinks.
To. She wants
so,
to save.
So we're suddenly
Shakespeare.
Setting, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Why? Why?
Be, why?
You can't explain
why
it to
save,
me. That's the
why
problem.
Save anybody?
Well, why Shakespeare though?
Because. Well, I don't know.
See, there you go. That's my problem. I'm trying to make a point here. I'm trying to make it sound stupid. The we've got this whole really cool idea that really goes nowhere, and we're our little surprise, which I thought was kind of clever, except for I wasn't surprised by it because it's one of those things where when it happens, it's not like a oh wow that was really cool I didn't see that coming. It was a oh yeah I think I saw that coming. Especially since we don't really say the name of the boy.
I would agree. Yeah.
And the boy's always in the library, and so it was
except
like,
at first I thought it was a girl.
So
I did too.
Well, they kept saying,
because
they kept saying he and him.
Yeah, but it sounded like a girl.
Okay, I'll go over here and get some sandwiches.
Because it was voiced by a girl.
That's what all the little. Yeah. That's what all little British boys sound like.
Okay, racist.
That's not racist.
That's sexist. That's different.
Sexist and racist.
No, it's not racist. The British aren't a race.
Well, nationalist.
Nationalist.
I'm a
yeah.
nationalist. No, that's right. You remember that? Oh, you guys won't know this. You guys didn't have. You don't have kids. We used to watch this thing called.
Also, now we're stupid.
I think it was Lola. Was it Lola and Charlie?
Yeah, I didn't watch that.
Yeah, it was a cute little show, but the kid had to have been like 11 or 12 years old, and he sounded like a girl on the show. So, anyway.
Well, this is an 8-year-old.
A girl
that's
voice
what I'm saying.
Nine
year old. I forgive it a little more on it, somebody that isn't closer to their voice changing because, I mean, some kids can. Some little boys
can. I still
can
instantly
sound like
thought
boys.
Girl.
Anyway,
when I heard it.
Despite that, they've got this cool Shakespeare thing going on here that really falls flat, and they think your payoff's going to be the fact that what's her name rescued, the niece rescued Shakespeare, which would, I'll admit, it's slightly clever. But it felt like it wasn't enough of a payoff for anything. And for
it,
this,
it just felt like an added element. Yeah, that didn't
and then this
to
like yeah, exactly, and then there's like this dictator chick that they don't really give you the. It's I have to chalk it up to the fact that she's just crazy. She's just bat blank
well,
crazy
that too.
I mean, it's just. That fell See, through for me.
The whole, story okay, could have been done without the Daleks.
Quickly, we're going to mutate her into a Dalek in order for her to be the pilot. And then
funny enough, that justified Asylum of the Daleks for me.
I thought of the same thing.
Actually, I'm glad I saw Asylum because it was a little more easier to swallow. Yeah,
it was like, okay, that's plausible now.
Okay, but here,
still busted, but it's going to plausible.
Here's the worst part of this thing that was the deal breaker for me. Is the rudimentary time travel.
Oh, the
we're
mirrors?
We're going to use the mirrors.
That was the
and
best
we've got
part.
This, we've got positronic energy that coats the mirrors in order to be created. And then, one clock, just as, you know, he explains that it really wasn't the clock. It didn't do anything.
The master
having
clock
Charlie
didn't do anything.
Be the reason why they can do it was a little more easier to swallow. But you're still using mirrors. Come on. I mean, if you did like an alternate dimensional type thing, I'd be... But time travel through
but
a mirror...
We also just came... What?
And they tried to explain it because it reflects light, and it's slightly behind what the actual time
tried,
is.
Yeah.
And so it's already time travel in its nature. Oh, but so what's the other thing that we do? We have to have a lot of mirrors. And in order to help with the...
The mirror is my least favorite part of this
the
story.
Chronometers of the thing. We've got a whole room full of clocks, too. And one master clock.
And then the fact that they stopped using it for time travel and just location travel.
Well, but they were still traveling through one time zone into another.
No.
Yeah, you got the... Well, no, they no, right. No, because there was the one where we were going...
After they come back to the present, they never travel back in time.
Yeah, he escaped
You're right.
Whatever kitchen room they were locked up in and went back to the...
You're right.
No.
That was...
When they did the aluminum foil trick.
No, that was parallel time.
Oh. That's what I'm saying. Is
and
right.
even...
And
even,
multiple times.
Okay. Have you ever
only
seen
Charlie
aluminum foil...
That smooth?
That smooth that you can see your reflection in it.
No, but this is the Prime Minister's house, so...
And it is the future, so maybe they've made leaps and bounds in rental draft.
But he said, don't crinkle that up.
We gotta unflatten that out.
Oh,
what is the show where they would do food packs? Anything where they would just do these generic science fiction food packs, and they're in that bright foil... It's not like aluminum foil where it's kind of dull and flat metallic. It's that shiny... high gloss, and they look like air pillows or something.
I wanted to like this, guys, because it's a Dalek story, and I love the Daleks, but I just...
Honestly, the Daleks are the weakest part of
no,
the story.
Daleks were the best.
No. If they would have dropped the Daleks out and focused on the Shakespeare issue,
I went, cool,
it would have been
Daleks
interesting. Well, that's because you're a fanboy.
I have to agree with Keith. I think the Daleks are the weak link here. I think we've got a great story that's set up that if the Daleks were not there... doing their
standard Dalek things.
We could have explored better and probably fixed some of the things that you've mentioned that you've had a problem with, like why is Shakespeare in the kitchen or the library, wherever he's at. The time travel.
Why the rudimentary time travel, though? I mean, you can't fix that. Come on. That was my favorite part.
I was okay with it watching.
I actually expected to come over to Keith's apartment today and see mirrors and clocks everywhere and him say, hey, this might work.
This is why it was my favorite part.
I was okay with it watching. I wasn't okay with it as a portal.
It didn't work either way.
This is why it's my favorite part. Because they set it up and they give it. Just enough science to make you go, huh?
Well, just the positronic particles on the surface of the mirror was good enough for you.
Well, no, just the idea that a mirror is reflecting light.
No, you're looking back in time.
No,
because that doesn't even scientifically work.
No, it is.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, first of all, we're dealing with time travel.
Okay.
I want you, before you pull out your
so
science,
you're saying
I want
if
you
just
to
continue
think about
to
that
add, if you continue
minute.
To add mirrors to a room, then you're going to spread out
no,
that.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
All the way back to the 1500s.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that when the fundamental, when you look into a mirror, mirror, because of the time it takes the light to pass from your eye to the mirror and back for the reflection, you are looking at an image back in time.
Yeah.
That is true. Just like when you look through a telescope at a distant star, you're not seeing the star present day. You're seeing the star at whatever light it gave off, however far away it is.
Right.
Okay. That's a better example than mirrors in a room.
Yeah, well, if I could travel through a telescope, then it makes more sense because that is so many thousands of years back.
It's a minuscule amount of time. I get that.
Which they mentioned.
So he flat out says it. It's not enough to even bother with. But, so we've got just enough science.
No.
Now we add the clocks, which are measurements of time, and we go into that whole, if a tree falls in the forest but nobody's around to hear it, does it make a sound? Does the very act of observing a thing change the nature of it? Okay, so we've got a clock, which is observing time. It is countering. It's counting time. Does that now change time? I thought you pair those two up, and you've got kind of a really cool, interesting idea. That's all it is. Now we've got this science fiction bit with these chromaton particles or positronic, whatever they are, that we've coated the mirrors with. That's the fairy dust that makes the whole thing
work. Right, right.
Now, here's the reason I can accept this.
It's the eye of harmony of it.
Well, the time machine, H.G. Wells. He says, space exists in three dimensions, height, width, and depth. But there's a fourth dimension of duration. A thing has to exist for a certain length of time or it doesn't exist at all. Now, this is completely wrong based on every law of quantum mechanics that has come down the pipe since then. But when he explains it in layman's terms like that in the book, I go, well, yeah, that makes sense. And so they give me just enough science to make me swallow the pill of plausibility, and I'm like, that's kind of cool. And I was all right with it at that point. I didn't need a whole bunch. This is very much in the vein of Doctor Who. This is very much in the, here's an impossible idea, and we're going to run with it. And we gave you just enough to make it plausible. I didn't need a whole bunch of stuff. I'm serious. I didn't need a whole bunch of stuff. The fact that they've got a room full of mirrors and clocks is ludicrous. I didn't care. No. I was having fun.
There's a certain amount of suspending believability for Doctor Who, and when you get there's a line, and they crossed that line.
I felt they walked right up
to
it, and they maybe put their toe on it.
The only other time that they crossed that line was when they had that ghost in that one story with the Fifth Doctor.
I agree with that. That was a complete crossover line, because it wasn't justified.
Well, I think there was another Eighth Doctor with the ghosts, and that crossed that line. Yeah, we have.
No?
That was the Haunted House one.
Yeah, the Haunted House one.
But well, that was an entity.
No, that was an entity, though. That was okay. Those weren't ghosts. That was an imprint.
What's the difference?
It was an imprint of the past. This was a
physical... A ghost is considered also an imprint of the past.
No. I believe that there's a possibility of ghosts from the standpoint of the fact that there's an imprint on...
I don't.
On reality. No, that's what I'm saying. I don't believe in ghosts. 100% don't believe in ghosts. But I'm willing to buy an imprint...
You're a step away, then.
I'm willing to buy an imprint as opposed to
you're
a physical...
You're at the line. Your toes are on the edge.
As opposed to a physical manifestation that communicates with you, which is...
Well,
no,
it's not the same thing, but it's a toe step away.
The house is using the imprint, which is a memory.
But the house
memory.
Is sentient.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
That doesn't make any more sense.
It does. It's sentient,
no!
It's sentient on the memory and
the
and
house
the
is a ghost
that it was made. No, the house was an entity. It clearly said that.
The house as an entity doesn't make sense either.
The house is manifesting. No, it was a new being. It was a new. I mean, it's like
any
other.
Because it was an entity, that doesn't make sense. That's a circular logic.
No.
I am because I am. No, that doesn't work.
No, but it's explained that it
it's
is
not
a,
explained.
It's a new. Yes, it was explained
I thought
that
it was
a new.
I didn't think it was
being.
Explained.
It was a new
life form that had
life
come
form.
Into being.
That's what I'm looking for. Life form.
But entity works just as well. Whatever you want to call it, there was a science to back it up versus label. Calling it a ghost.
Exactly.
Well,
now, they just flat out say ghost. And
if they had come
one.
Out
they do
and
say
said,
ghost in the other one, but they heavily imply and do not add enough science for ghosts for the house.
I think they imply more science for the house than they do the other. If they had come
not
out,
enough.
And if they had
not
come
enough.
Out, which one was that? Winter for the
Chimes
Adept?
Oh, Winter.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, that's the absolute crappiest one we're talking about.
Winter for the
Where
I thought
they're
that
in the house
the one.
With the schoolgirls and the
no, that's the winter ghost one.
Right,
that
winter
we're
for the
about.
That's winter
for
the
Adept is the no is the isn't that the beasts the
But they're still
doing that's the Land of the Dead.
Okay, then it is Winter for the Dead.
So Winter for the Dead. If they had come out and given us one line that backed up the psychic mental projection of this ghost.
But that's your science. That's your science that you're applying to that.
Yes.
The same you're applying to the time travel, which you have an issue with.
That's true.
Right, but that's, but my point is...
But! Okay, so it's okay for ghosts, but not time travel.
No, because they didn't do it for the ghosts.
But they did do it for the time travel.
They did do it for the time travel, yes.
No, he's saying in the house, they did it for time for the ghost. They gave that
there
line.
There was no ghosts in that story.
There was!
No, they
the
were
house
all,
was a ghost.
Listen, it was
Monster
not a ghost.
House.
No, it was not.
Monster House.
It was not.
It was Monster House.
It was explained.
It was Monster House.
It was explained that it was a new life form that had come into being. And
no,
it was
they said it was. They didn't explain it.
Yeah, that's what
they
said.
They did say that.
They said it. They didn't explain it.
But, no, they
did. Here's the deal. Winter for the Adept has a ghost.
Yes.
We call it a ghost.
Yes,
I agree. Times of Midnight has a ghost, but we back it up with science and call it an entity and explain that it's a life form. Okay, it's weak, but you've given me enough to
weak.
Go on.
I'm going to concede that it's weak, but it gives me something to go on. Now,
Time of the Daleks has time travel with mirrors and clocks.
I will concede,
and it's weak.
I will concede that, but it was too weak. The new being was enough for me to say, okay, it's feeding off these memories within this house. That's why. The clocks with the... I mean, it was too big to wrap my brain around. At least new being, new life form.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
That's where I'm going with it.
I can see where you're going.
Let me say this. I appreciate them trying. No, I do. I appreciate them making the attempt. Because unlike Winter for the Adept, where they made no attempt to give it any sort of scientific basis, that was absolute crap. But this, at least they made the attempt.
They did make the
attempt. I think it was a very poor attempt.
And it was weak. I will give you that. Now, I think it got stronger once it's revealed that Charlie is really the manifestation, and the clocks don't have anything to do with
it.
This master clock.
Yeah, that made it more forgiving. Yes, in fact, I was a bit relieved when the doctor points that out.
It's not just... Because that was... And it was one of those things that even Charlie is like... But what? How do you... What is it... This shouldn't... Oh... And the woman starts to explain, well, you see, it's, and then the Dalek busts into the room and they have to run off, so they never get to it. And there are several of those moments throughout the story where they started to kind of delve a little deeper into it and just went, nah, we're not going to. That's why I was like, this is very much Doctor Who, because we'll explain later. We're going to talk about it, and, you know, we're not going to talk about it. So I liked that part of it. I liked the fact that we had
this
Dalek.
You know, the whole Charlie being able to travel through, and that's the reason... That was really cool because they were setting something up that comes up in Neverland.
You lay off me.
That I'd like to talk about and point out how it really sucked. But no,
let's launch into Neverland right now.
No.
Keith, read the synopsis.
We can't. I don't have the somebody synopsis. Didn't listen to it.
Yeah. I liked the Dalek elements of this. I agree with Keith. I think in a way the Daleks were the worst, or not worst, but they were the weakest part of the story because. Again, we've got two different conflicting ideas going on here, and we tried mashing them together, and it didn't really go anywhere.
As
coupled
many
with
Dalek
the fact
stories.
That we already did this story with the Daleks, of being stuck in a time loop, and it really kind of fell flat. The fact that the Daleks have this extinction event bomb that we're going to unleash and everything, and it's like...
Which
that's
wasn't very
done.
Well explained.
Yeah.
That's
explored.
Been done on a retro basis for us, because that whole bomb in Stolen Earth and...
Well, not even that. I mean, the Daleks always have
take
a bomb.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
I mean, that's just, you know, it wasn't even a surprise at this point. It was like, oh, there's a bomb.
Which,
again.
And for me...
Oh, it's going to blow up everything, including the ship, this fleet of 1,700 ships that are in, you know, this weird bubble thing, and it's going to wipe out and reverberate throughout the vortex and kill everybody. It's like,
except for it's going to set up... The Daleks have already been placed throughout time in order to take over everything in the new reality.
Right. Okay, that's kind of cool.
I like that.
But you know what? You already did that, too. We blew up a whole galaxy in Apocalypse.
Exactly.
I mean, it just...
No, it was definitely borrowed themes. Now, I agree with your comments to a point of, the Daleks almost were kind of the weak link of this. But at least with the Daleks, it was
it was very true to the Dalek nature. We didn't get away from that. Yeah, no, that's true. So I think that's what I appreciate.
And that's one of those things that maybe that's
I do like when they think outside the box with the Daleks, which I think is what you appreciate in a Dalek story. But at least this one fit their MO.
It's frustrating as a Dalek fan because you present us with a straightforward Dalek story and we complain that there's nothing new here and it's the same old Daleks. But then you think outside the box and you do something different and we get Evolution of the Daleks or Daleks of Manhattan and we go nuts because it's not what we want from a Dalek story. So I completely get
it. It's not what you wanted.
Well, it's not what you wanted either.
I didn't rail on it as much as you did.
Yeah. I get that as soon as you go, I'm going to write a Dalek story, you're really opening the door for some criticism because the fans are going to eat you alive one way or the other, and I understand that.
Because there's no happy medium.
There really isn't. There really isn't. I mean, we've covered enough Dalek stories on this show to be able to go, you know, Death to the Daleks, which I absolutely love because it's a standard Dalek story, even though they do a couple things new, but then we go back to, well, what are we going to do? We don't have any power. Give them a gun. All right. It's just,
well,
and what do we do at the end? We've got a bomb. It's right there, and I love it for that.
This goes back to what you said.
This does the same thing, but I'm complaining about it. So,
well, this goes back to what you said. That's what I liked about Mutant Phase. They thought outside the box, and they had this thing where they were just going to create this paradoxical event in order to just kind of, and that catches them into a loop, which is great, fantastic. Yeah,
no, it is.
And then we come along and we try to do it again, and it's like, no. Come on, you got to think outside the box again. You can't think inside the same box that somebody thought of outside last time.
It just, and again, this is number 32, so maybe we're still early enough in the Big Finish run which that they don't have an overall.
Phase was 15. That's a long stretch for.
Yeah, it's a halfway. You know, yeah. I mean, half as many, or twice as many. Twice as many.
You know, and maybe it was originally a trilogy. We'll do the Dalek Empire because trilogies are cool. We're always going to do trilogies. And then somebody said, you know, we really need to do a fourth since we've got Paul McGann. He knew the Dalek story. And they went, oh, yeah. Well, come up with something. Hey, while you're at it, can you drop a Dalek back into Roman times for me? That was the other thing. The doctor's concerned about one Dalek. One Dalek in a bunker.
Where'd the other one go?
One Dalek in a bunker in 2012,
which
is enough for him to go nuts, like ballistic, like grab a gun, bring in the National Guard, the Marines, anybody he can get his hands on, seal the base, threaten his companion, and nuke the facility because one Dalek is around in 2012. One Dalek gets in Rome.
Wait.
And there's no reason at all about the timeline.
Now, he did keep... Now, this was for the benefit of the listener, but he does keep saying, whatever happened to the other Dalek? He does continue to lament about it, so...
But he saw what happened to that one Dalek in Horns of Nymon.
Not Horns of Nymon.
Not Horns. Seasons of Fear.
Seasons of Fear.
And you're also referencing to a fact that the doctor thinks all Daleks are gone.
Well, but I just from the technology standpoint.
But you still
we've got one Dalek in 2012. We've got machine guns. We've got lasers. We've got grenades. We've got all this kind of big stuff.
I wouldn't have to agree with Keith on that.
But you think there's no more Dalek, period. And then one shows up. Of course you're going to react that way.
He just came out of a huge. Mind-blowing time war that he thought he had ended everything, and then one shows up, and you're thinking, how does this one survive when I just did the ultimate thing to take out all of the Daleks?
How many more could be after that? Of course it's over.
It is a little more lackluster when the season finales come around.
Well, yes.
And there's like millions of them out there, and it's like,
well, that's a whole other story.
that's the laissez-faire attitude that McGann has toward them throughout the story. Yes, yes. When they're in the kitchen and there's two of them, and he even comments, "Well, I could handle one, but two, what?" And he's so it's hysterical. It's funny. He's so dismissive of them. I'm sending the boy out for sandwiches. I'll follow. Yeah, you go out there. You're making them nervous. And he closes and locks the door. And it's like, what are you doing? And then they blow the door open. It wasn't locked. And he's just at every opportunity to cut these things down. He is. And it's very funny and humorous to listen to. But at the same time, it's like, you're not concerned. at all. I don't buy it. When you're giving your big speech about they're not here to help us, they're here to do this, but you're so dismissive of them that it's hard to take them.
I like that with the Eighth Doctor.
No, I do too. It's hard to take the Daleks seriously.
Makes it seem like Moffat's statement of the Daleks are overused.
They're the most easily defeatable.
Yes. But the Eighth Doctor does that with a lot of the enemies he comes across.
Well, that's true.
It's not something he reserves for the Daleks. It's an Eighth Doctor trait with anyone he comes across. He has this enough of an arrogance that he doesn't sound like a real,
jerk.
Jerk. Thank you. To censor ourselves all through this podcast.
That's part of his charm. I mean,
I would agree.
It's almost Third Doctor like.
Yeah, I would agree.
Like I said, for all the nitpicking we're doing, I liked the story. I wish it hadn't been a complete copycat of Mutant Phase.
Yeah.
From a plot structuring element.
It is. All right. Anything else you guys have to say about the time of the Daleks?
Still think it's my favorite Dalek story we've listened to.
So you liked this better than Mutant Phase, really?
Well, I also remember Mutant Phase to me is a copy of this.
Oh, because he heard this first.
I heard this first.
Oh, you did?
I listened to this on my own.
But not in order.
But you hadn't heard.
I didn't know that.
Well, I was listening to.
He was just doing the McGanns.
I was just doing the McGanns, and this came along, and I listened to it.
Davison. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. You're confusing Davison and McGann again.
What is it with these two?
Chrissy would be not impressed with you. All right. Well, our next one then is not going to be reviewed tonight. So,
sir, not appearing in this film.
What's coming up on the schedule, Sean?
I don't know. Do you really want me to go there?
Well, I know a Big Finish Audio that we'll be reviewing.
There will be at some point, yes.
But not next week.
No, next week. For Friday Night Who this week, we've got the second half of the box set, which is The Romans with William Hartnell. I can't wait to review these because I enjoyed The Rescue so much. I'm going to go out and say that now. And so we're going to do The Romans. And then our next week's show, we're going to do both The Rescue and The Romans. So we'll cover both of those. Following week on the 26th is our Halloween special, The Talons Wen Chiang. And then we're going to do a whole story on that. Probably a lot of arguing. And then...
Between who?
Or a lot of agreeing.
Yeah, it would be a lot of agreeing. I think we both are on the same page.
You and I are both on the same page.
We'll see how I fall.
In November...
We're just not going to say anything. We'll just let you review it, and then we'll say, okay, here's why you're wrong.
It's going to hold up iPads. Wrong. No. In November, it is out on DVD now. It released this week, I think, Ambassadors of Death.
Yes, it did.
It did?
It did.
Yeah.
You going to buy this one?
I am.
All right, it's all yours.
Is this the Pertwee Sway?
Yeah.
It already came out.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to buy it.
Okay.
That's an expensive one, but I'm going to buy it. Just like seven stories. Seven episodes.
It's a seven-parter.
I may have to watch it before you guys, because I've heard so many good things.
I've heard so many good things, but I've never seen it.
And maybe it'll actually be colorized. I don't like Day of the Daleks.
For Friday Night Who?
No. Planets. No.
No.
Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Yes.
Sorry. Go ahead.
What we're going to do with Ambassadors of Death, because it is a seven-part story... On November 2nd, we are going to do for Friday Night Who parts 1 through 4. So we're going to break it almost in half. So we do the first half, if you will, of Ambassadors of Death for Friday Night Who. Now, our show that week, we're going to pick up where we left off on tonight's discussion and do the two next Paul McGann Big Finish audios, which is number 33, Neverland, and number 50, Zagreus, because apparently they fit together nicely. So.
Wow, they jumped that far from 33 to 50?
33 to 50.
Zagreus is so disappointing.
Maybe we should find out if any of the other... Okay, go ahead.
It's after that things get wonky, and I'll talk to you about that off mic. The following week, November 9th, for Friday Night Who, we'll do parts 5 through 7 of Ambassadors of Death, and then we'll come back with a show all about Ambassadors of Death the following week. And I'll go ahead and do one more week out. Next week, we're going to do The Web Planet with William Hartnell. Ooh. And then we will do The Web Planet and Big Finish number 5, The Fearmonger, for our show that week. And that takes us right.
The fear what?
Fearmonger. Not okay. Monger. I keep wanting to call it Mongerer.
Monger.
It's Monger. Fearmonger. Just leave me alone. I invent words, okay? And that takes us right
not
up
as
to...
as many as I do.
That takes us right up to Thanksgiving, and we still don't know what's happening for Thanksgiving. We may be at Chicago Turds.
Well, you might be.
There's a big anniversary coming, though.
It happens to be that week.
Yeah.
Whose anniversary?
Our anniversary.
Our anniversary.
What anniversary is that?
A big one.
A big one? A big number.
But we finally hit triple digits?
We do. Our 100th anniversary happens to be Thanksgiving weekend.
Our 100th?
100th.
And Dr. Phil seems like he has some big plans for us, too.
All right.
Do you guys see that tweet?
I didn't see that tweet.
You didn't?
What did he send?
Oh.
Don't worry about it. It's a video. Surprised. Don't worry about
it. You'll find out in one in a month. Six episodes.
Oh, it's too long to wait.
A month and a half.
Okay, well, that's that for that. And I will get the schedule updated on the website, because I think right now it only goes up to Wen Chiang, so I'll put these following ones up there.
Good thing. Now you have to add Neverland. It's on there.
I did that on
purpose. What got bumped?
It worked.
What got bumped, Sean?
Nothing got bumped. There was a hole in the schedule. That's why it worked out perfectly. Because as soon as we decided to break up Ambassadors of Death, I went, I don't have anything to talk about that week. You know what? I'm not going to do my homework this week, and I'm going to force it to bump this.
Ooh, I'm halfway done with that homework.
Zacharias?
How many episodes is it? Or how long is it?
It's 2 hours.
It's 2 hours.
It's 2 hours, okay.
Yeah.
I just expected it since it was like...
It's not...
It's the 50th...
Yeah, which is...
anniversary for them.
Anniversary one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. I'm gonna throw this out there. Should we be doing some more research in case there are other stories that lead up to it? Because it's my understanding that Davison may not be playing the Doctor, but Davison, McCoy, Baker, and another little special surprise is in there.
But they're not playing the Doctor, so I don't think it matters.
Not, but, okay.
I don't
think the other special
because
surprise, I think, is.
Okay.
Well, the other special surprise...
You would
may,
know. You've listened
yeah,
to it. I haven't.
Kind of, but...
All right, enough.
No, it, I don't think.
All right, so we don't have to worry about
it doesn't
another,
tie in,
another story leading
as far as I'm
to,
aware.
They wouldn't drop Zagreus and anything else.
I wouldn't think so.
30, whatever, and 50.
If it would be, it would be a name drop.
It's a whole year later.
And considering the fact that the actors don't play them characters,
all right,
I wouldn't worry about it.
All right, cool.
So there's that.
Which makes Zagreus even more disappointing.
It's going to be good. All right, it's got to be better than Neverland. All right,
you say that.
That's gonna do it for this week. Until next
winter
week,
for the adept.
That was bad.
Don't spoil it for people.
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, there's a ghost.
Talk about it in a month.
No, but well,
less than a
there
month.
Was a ghost yeah. in Neverland. So
3 weeks.
Spoilers
okay.
week.
Yes,
there was.
Okay.
There was
unless
more
that's explained, it's a grand.
There's more of an... What? Oh, okay, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, no. they explained that in Neverland, too.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did.
No, they didn't.
The location.
You guys have 3 weeks
not where he went,
to simmer.
Yeah.
You hear
that's
me?
Not where the Doctor was, though.
Oh.
He was on the TARDIS. That's
yeah,
the problem.
That's true.
You hear me? I'm giving you notice. You've got 3 weeks to listen to Zagreus.
Sean,
you've got three weeks to listen to
Neverland.
Neverland and Zagreus. Chrissy, you're my podcasting listening buddy for Big Finish.
All right. That's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I've listened to my homework, and I'm Glenn.
Je m'appelle Sean. That's why I didn't listen to it, because I was doing other homework.
I'm Keith.
That's French.
You're just Keith.
I had listened
and
to it
listened
long
to it
before.
Twice.
And sadly, I'll probably listen to it a third time.
I'm going to have to now, too. And it was a stinging pile. I'm Glenn. Or, I wait, cheers.
Good night, everybody.
Be soon.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.